Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The following podcast has some fruity language. Sorry, my bad. So take care of who's listening around you.
Kia ora koutou, no mahara mai to my podcast, it's personal, with me Anika Moa.
Kia ora.
This is a podcast where I talk to some wonderful humans, bringing you frank and intimate insights into subjects that are personal to me and to my guests.
And then I started reading about ADHD,
yeah.
And there were all of these things that I thought were just dumb shit that I did and thought that actually other people seemed to think in the same way.
Yeah.
And so that's when I thought, right, I'm going to make an appointment.
Today I'm with Anna Pillay. I'm talking to Anna today because she's recently been diagnosed with ADHD, like me. And Anna is also a mother to three beautiful tamariki. So her parenting journey's been, you know, a bit of a trip. And it's going to be a good conversation. Let's go. Kia ora, welcome to my podcast. It's cool, eh? It's flash out.
It is so cool.
Is this your first podcast you've ever done, or have you done many?
No, I haven't done anything like this at all.
Really?
Before. I'm more of a behind the scenes. I've always been a bit of a behind the scenes person.
Okay.
Although this is like a little, this was my fantasy from when I was a small child, was to have some sort of a radio show. So this is my moment.
Yeah,
where I'm
moment.
Living it out. I used to walk around with my little Walkman and I used to do the intros and then I used to sing the songs and
aww.
Then I used to do the ads and
how
then
come,
go back.
How come you're so behind the scenes? Because you were at TV3 and you were behind the scenes.
I was like doing integration and doing
okay.
kind of production and
what
integration.
What does that even mean? What
middle management. I was like just very middle management, not that important, but had a good time. It was a good space to be in. So we'd be like putting all the stuff into Top Model. So we'd do the deals with CoverGirl and with Glassons
okay.
and whatever. And then we'd be on set begging the lovely producers and stuff going, oh my God, can you please just get that duffel bag in there for another 5 seconds? Otherwise we're
oh
going to lose
God,
the money.
That was
like,
your job.
That
right.
kind of stuff.
To,
yeah.
To make sure that you got the promotion of the
and to
product.
Schmoo-
were-
and to work in between the clients and the production company to figure out what they would do. To what they could do to deliver the value for the client, but also not ruin the show.
So you
and so you'd be like a mediator.
So
they
you're
called
Schmoser.
Me Kofi Annan for a
Kofi
while.
Kofi Annan.
Yes, Kofi Annan for a while because
why?
Of my diplomatic
oh my
skills.
God. Was it because we were in at TV3 in the heyday? You were telling me before when John and Carol were
yeah.
news anchors.
Yeah.
Was it a good job to have at the time?
Like,
was it pretty high-flying?
I loved it. But I started off, I kind of scrambled my way up.
Yeah.
So it was good because I didn't go to university. I screwed up university. I couldn't, very ADHD-ish.
That you so didn't I, know, though, at the time.
Which I didn't
right?
know at the time.
Yeah.
But I cruised through school to a certain level.
Yeah.
And then I got to a point where I had to really be able to remember things and perform in exams. And I just
don't.
Couldn't do it. And so I would panic. I would not do the work. And I wouldn't retain the information. I wouldn't retain the remembering the quotes and remembering the dates for history.
Yeah.
And then I would just absolutely freak out. And then I just screwed them all up.
You know what? That's exactly what I did at school. I got D's and C's
yeah.
in subjects that I was really good at. And even to a point where now, where I do TV shows, this podcast, I can't remember anything.
No.
Any information that is stored is never stored. It's just in and gone.
Yeah, you just can't. I can't remember that stuff. Even just little tasks and things, I have to just write everything. And people's names, I don't remember people's names ever.
Okay, let's go, let's talk about ADHD and neurodiversity.
Yes.
Because you're an interesting study.
I am.
And I always love the idea of talking to someone who also has ADHD, because I do and I'm medicated, because it's so exciting. And thrilling
yeah.
because our brains, I can see your brain moving 100 miles an hour
yeah.
and mine is too. So let's go back to the start. How did you find out you had ADHD? Was there a moment where you were like, oh shit, well, you know, your hubby was like, you need to get to that doctor?
No, he wouldn't really notice or get involved. He's very, like, he's a South Island small town guy.
Yeah,
but he does really nice things for me now. Like, he writes down on small pieces of paper what I should pay in GST very clearly and says, you need to do it right now, which is massively helpful because he knows now that he needs to put the information in front of me.
Yeah.
And he said, I read in a book, if it's not there in front of you, it may as well not exist.
That's good husbanding.
And I was like, I adore you. Like, this was, you just had a moment there. Like, that was so helpful.
So was there like a tipping point for you?
I had not really thought of, I just thought that I was a bit shit and a bit of an underachiever, mm-hmm. and didn't know, I'd had all of this telling of having so much promise and being so bright potentially, and
potentially
having people would be like, oh, you're so bright, how come you're doing this, why haven't you done this, why didn't you go to university, why, and I'd be like, I'm obviously not that bright.
But why do you care what other people think though?
I don't.
Do you run in circles where success is you're valued by your success and your brain and house, the money?
Not so much the house and the money, but intellect was always what was really, really valued, and study and where you went to university and mm-hmm. stuff back in my family. Mm-hmm. And I cruised through and they were like, oh, she's very promising. And then I just started screwing everything up and being like a impulsive teenager, behaving badly.
What are we talking here? Are we talking sex, drugs and rock and roll? Or
not as much as I would have liked to, but probably more because I wasn't. I was quite sheltered.
Yeah.
But in fact, my big rebellion was that I became a born-again Christian.
How old were you?
When I was about 15 for 2 years. My parents were atheists. And I started standing on street corners, like, excuse me, do you know Jesus, to people? And trying to pray over my mum's broken arm to heal it. But then I would be like, is it fixed? And she would be like, no, it's still whatever. And I'd be like, it's because he didn't believe, and would storm off like Kevin and Perry.
Psycho, I love it.
Absolutely nuts. And then I left that and became, I discovered football and got a season ticket to Arsenal and became obsessed with that instead.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just kept on not doing as well as I hoped. And I would always be really nervous to try things and to put myself out there. So you would say, why have I never done anything like this? I would never have ever put myself out there to say that I even wanted to, because I would think that people would just think, oh my God, how embarrassing. I can't believe that she would think she would want to do that.
So when were you diagnosed then?
Just last year. At 50.
At 50.
At 50.
So you're at the doctor, well, or your therapist, because I
booked myself in for a psychiatrist.
Yeah, great.
Because I thought I probably will want meds if I'm right. And then from looking at neurodiversity, from looking at my son and from learning about his autism and from learning about Lola's stuff, that was when it started going, oh, hang on a minute, I wonder if there's something going on with me. And then I started reading about ADHD.
Yeah.
And there were all of these things that I thought were just dumb shit that I did and thought, that actually other people seemed to think in the same way.
Yeah.
And so that's when I thought, right, I'm going to make an appointment.
And did you do the test?
I did.
And
they were like, oh God, go and see somebody, like, you nutter. You know, yeah, the test results were like.
That's what my therapist said too. And that test that I did, which he would have done, it's the first time I've ever, like, scored high on a test.
Yeah!
I was like, oh, I'm completely ADHD.
Yeah. And it's a thing, and it's not other people think in this crazy way.
Yeah.
And that was just liberating. It's really nice.
Did you cry when you found out? Like, were you relieved? Did you cry? Were you angry? Were you going through stages of grief? What was going through your mind?
Yeah, I think there is. There's a little bit of, oh, wow, what could I have done if I'd known about this? Mm-hmm. What could I have done? Could I have gone to university and done something? Could I have been a psychologist or something really cool that I would actually have loved to have done? Could I have done something like that? And so I had a little bit of a kind of introspective, feeling sorry for myself moment.
Mm.
But then what am I going to do? Like,
you can't turn back time.
If I could find a way.
I love it so.
But yeah, you can't. So I just had to go, fuck it, onwards and upwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And just see what happens.
So are you medicated?
Yes.
And what drugs are you on?
I've tried all of the different ones.
Because you have to, right?
You have to.
There's Ritalin.
So I tried that first.
Yep.
I had the long-acting and the short-acting Ritalin.
Done that.
But it made me a little bit, like, angry.
Yeah.
Or a little bit, like...
Like intense, eh?
Intense. And I would get these little rushes of, like...
Especially if you have a coffee.
Yeah. Or if somebody annoyed me or something, it would feel like a...
Okay. So Ritalin, no.
Rubifen, no. Dexamphetamine now.
I've tried
Fantastic.
Oh, okay. Have you tried Concerta? Because that's what I'm on.
No.
It's
Is that
really
good?
It's good, but I'm only on a low dose of 18 milligrams. What are you on?
Oh, I'm on like...
5,000?
So many milligrams.
Really?
I think I have 2 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon. But
okay.
I don't know how many milligrams they are. I don't know the details.
Of course you don't.
I don't know the numbers.
You know, us women, us wahine, we discover ADHD quite late in life because back in the 70s it was just boys that had the obvious signs of ADHD.
And you think if you're not running around physically.
Or hyperactive or yelling out in class or bothering people.
Yeah.
If you were back at school and someone had come into the classroom and noticed you, would they have been able to tell that you had ADHD? What were your manifestations with ADHD?
I don't know if anybody else could have noticed it, especially when I was younger, but because it was all so internal. So when I was explaining it to the psychiatrist, I said it was like I always have 50 tabs open on my computer in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't focus on which one I'm going to do next, and I don't know which one to click, and I'm noticing all notifications coming at me from everything, and then I just freeze into a frozen situation. So I think with school, I found it hard to make friends. I didn't really know. I found it hard to relate to people. I had loads of social anxiety.
Yeah.
But I also had I had a really great childhood, but I had like lots of kind of little sad internal feelings going on. And I had like weird, it was a little odd because I had my parents having a really happy, wholesome, great divorce when I was very little. It was probably more as a teenager that I started, like, I was a bit kind of attention seeking. Do you know what I guess
well,
is a little
Christian
person
thing.
As well? I was a real little liar when I was a fantasist when I was a little kid. So that was probably quite a sign.
Why were you lying? What were you wanting from that?
I don't know. I wrote this really sad story at school about how my guinea pig had died, and my guinea pig hadn't died. It was meant to be a true story. And then...
Why?
I don't know. And I told my teachers that my parents... that my mum had gone to New York and left me home alone for...
Did they ring?
For the holidays.
Did
and they rang.
Oh, my God.
And I told people at school that for Christmas stockings that I got an ankle sock with a tangerine.
And you didn't?
No.
Do you still lie?
No. No.
Okay. So you just went through a phase of lying.
Yeah, as a kid. But apparently that kind of impulsive lying is a bit of ADHD thing.
It is.
No, now I might exaggerate when I'm telling a good story just a little bit.
Well, I do too. Jeez, I'm a great storyteller.
But I don't just make up complete lies. Can you imagine? You'd get caught out.
Okay. No, I want to talk to you about the ADHD manifestation.
Yes.
So for me... I have difficulty controlling my emotions. So when I cry, I cry. So I could cry all day and be shaking and heaving, vomiting. Mm. So that's one of them. I'm really impulsive. And some will be like, do you want to come to Huntley? Yep, cool. Get in the car. Come on, let's go. And then forget what I'm doing. Alcohol reliance. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people with ADHD have drug issues, alcohol issues. So I like to, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. I haven't drunk for a couple of weeks. Hyper focus only if I'm interested in it. I'm a clean freak.
Oh, no, I'm not that.
See, but this is the thing. So I have these ADHD traits. I need routine, but I hate it.
Yeah.
And I hate being told what to do. So that's my number one thing is don't tell me what to do. I have to come up with the idea. And if you tell me what to do, I won't do it. I just won't.
Yeah.
Tell me, if someone says ring me, I'm like, you ring me. You know, what are your
traits? Oh, I kind of love that. That's like a little kind of stubborn.
Yeah.
So what are my traits?
Why?
Well, I buy ridiculous things in the middle of the night and then I have to phone shops and beg them to cancel my purchases.
Don't cancel them. Keep them.
I ordered 200 individually wrapped things of mints like I was in a shop.
What?
So when I was post-childbirth. And then like strange trousers.
Why?
That were one size fits all trousers. And I had like, I didn't even know what was arriving. 500 individual sachets of coconut sugar arrived one day.
You're weird already. I love it.
Yeah, I had weird impulse middle of the night shopping.
Because you weren't medicated?
Yeah, no, I wasn't.
Because I'm medicated and I'm still impulsive.
No, I still am. I blurt things out. So I was misdiagnosed as kind of having anxiety and depression.
Which are related to ADHD.
Related.
Yeah.
And so I've been medicated for that for a really long time. So I am either really full on or I want to hide away and be completely by myself and just sit in my own little brain thinking about things.
Yeah.
I have this kind of Twitter life where quite blurty and quite argumentative debatey. So I have what I've had to do because I've got my three children, where I used to be quite emotional and argumentative and have an occasional temper myself.
Yeah.
Because my kids can't handle that, I have to be really even tempered. Charlie can't even handle it if my face looks too angry or if I raise my voice at all, because the kids have got extra sensitivity to that, it goes horribly wrong. So I've had to learn to just be like, okay, darling, like blah blah blah,
be vanilla
in every single situation. And I have this little angry, feisty, impulsive person inside.
Yeah.
So I argue with people on Twitter about politics on the side impulsively, and then I force myself to have a routine and write everything down.
Yeah.
So my main thing was avoidance and frozenness.
Sorry for laughing. It's just it's such a relief to talk to someone else who has
the same kind of. So I would wake up in the morning, and even if I only had three perfectly reasonable things that any normal person would be able to do, I wake up in the morning and it felt insurmountable. So I'd be like, oh my God, I've got to go to work.
Overwhelming.
And then I have to go. At some point I have to buy some milk. And I'm going to have to pick up the children. Yeah. And I have to email my mum. And there's other things to do. And it feels completely overwhelming. Even though if I talk to somebody else, I know how much other people can do in a day. But I would feel overwhelmed. And then instead of just getting on with things, sometimes I would just freeze and want to just stay in bed. Or just go and do something completely different.
That's exactly what I do.
But the guilt and the knowing that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing is full on the whole time. So it's not fun, avoidance.
But you're beating yourself up because you feel like a failure because you can't even get a bottle of milk from the dairy.
Yeah, yeah.
See, before this interview, I got up, I woke at 8. I was like, I had to time myself so that I could have a shower by 9:15 so that I could put my makeup on and put a clothes on, and then I had to leave at 10. But I avoided everything until about 9:00.
Yeah.
I just lay in bed and yelled at my dogs.
Yeah.
And I was really grumpy because it was too hard. The feeling of overwhelm just to get dressed, just to have some eggs, to feed the dogs.
Yeah.
It's too much for me. So I'm like, okay. And then I'm in the car and my heart's going, and I'm so nervous, I'm sweating and I'm shaking. And now we're just sitting here on the couch and everything's fine.
And it's so nice.
It's nice. But the lead
up to it. The anticipation. Well, even yesterday, yesterday my husband was asking me things, putting the trampoline on Trade Me. And I was like, I can't.
Why would he do that?
I'm nervous.
You've got an interview tomorrow.
I'm nervous and I actually can't think or talk about anything else at all. Because I'm just feeling really nervous and I can't,
you know, and I was like, can you take the children to school this morning? And he did it because he understands that. But a lot of people would think that that's not. It is, when I look at it, I think that is actually pathetic.
It's not.
Why can't I be like everybody else and get up at 7 in the morning, have had a shower earlier outside of my normal time, got the children to school, done their packed lunches, and then come here? Like, people do way more before 9:45 than
that. I know. That was the other question I was going to talk to you about is, being neurodiverse, you've got twins, one of them has autism.
Yes.
Lola, your oldest daughter, has chromosome.
Yeah.
So explain that and explain how you feel about being a parent to neurodiverse children then finding out you're neurodiverse.
Mm. So with Lola, you know what? I actually had just assumed that everything would be smooth sailing. I had not met anybody at that point who had a child with any kind of disability or anything like that at all. And I just assumed that everything would be fine.
Ka pai.
Yeah. And then I was about 7 or 8 months pregnant and they were measuring and stuff and they were like, oh, she's a bit of a strange shaped baby. She's like got a tiny little head and she's growing really, really long. She's got really long little limbs and a tiny little waist.
Oh, bless the baby.
And I was like, oh, she's like a little supermodel. And they were like, no, it's like a little bit worrying. But they said, she's probably just not getting enough nutrition. We'll just keep an eye on what's going on and then it should be fine. We just need to make sure she's born before she starves to death. And I was like, oh, okay, well, we're going to put it like that. And then that kept on carrying on. And then it was a little bit of an emergency situation. And she ended up I had an emergency cesarean. And then when she was born, the obstetrician, and I'll never forgive him for this, said to me, did you smoke or drink while you were pregnant? Literally, I was on the table and they'd just taken her out.
You're not even Māori and he's asking you.
And I'm in you know how when you have it, I don't know if you've had a cesarean, but you're in a crucifix position. They've like put you on a thing and your arms are tied to a table and you're slightly tilted.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I didn't, because I didn't. And he said, oh, it's the worst placenta I've ever seen. And I don't even know what that meant.
What a dipshit.
But then she kept on going blue and she had heart problems and she had to be rushed off. And it was all very, we don't know what's wrong, life and death. And then eventually once I was at home, they'd done some blood tests on her. And this beautiful neurologist, Claire from Auckland Hospital, she actually phoned me and said, look, I'm on leave at the moment, but I noticed that your address is quite near me. I live in the same area. Do you mind if I pop round? And she popped round and she drew me pictures of chromosomes and she explained genetics to me. And she said, there's a little bit in the middle of one of Lola's chromosomes that is missing, a little deletion. Nobody else has got the same bit missing. We don't know what those genes do. Okay. So we don't know what effect that will have. So if you have Down syndrome, there's that extra piece of chromosome on 13 and they kind of know what it is. And they were like, with Lola, we don't really know. So it was like, she may never walk, she may never talk, we don't know what she will do. And when she was 5, she developed glaucoma and they said, if we don't get this under control, she'll completely lose her vision within 6 months. So it's been a big journey. But she is a firecracker.
How old is she now?
She's 15.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is hilarious.
Yeah, I saw her on Barclay Manor.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah. She is amazing. And she lives part-time in this complete fantasy world where she is inside children's books.
Yeah, yeah.
She's Janet from The Secret Seven at the moment.
Okay.
Oh. And then part-time in a normal situation. And she has all these imaginary boyfriends.
And so... So you, it's awesome. It's awesome. 15 years later, and you had to find out, you had to discover along the way because no one knows the missing chromosome, what's
going to happen. Yeah. So she has some mobility issues. She has some vision issues. She has some learning difficulties. But she is probably the most creative person that I've ever met in my life.
Wow.
She's really funny. And she's quite left field.
Great.
She every year for her birthday, we have to get her a cake made with her and her current romantic interest
lover going
off somewhere whilst the actual real life girlfriend looks on in jealousy or rage.
also when she was with Dustin from Stranger Things, we had to have Susie vomiting in the background.
Oh, my gosh.
And Lola rushing off with Dustin.
Oh, my God.
She wants to write a book called The Majestic Jawline of a British Boy.
Your Lola is awesome.
She is.
What do you...
Brilliant.
How do you find parenting with ADHD? Because... I'm a psycho with my kids. I'm impatient. I yell sometimes. So how do you parent with your amazing superpower?
It is, so it's in some ways it's fantastic and I'm fun and and stuff, but I beat myself up. But I am not. I hate doing the housework, cooking, cleaning. So I am not a great mother in terms of making sure people have got their lunches and things. So I see all these other mothers and they are going camping and they are preparing things and they are organising stuff and they're taking
baking
their
shit.
Kids to all of these different activities and stuff all the time and doing all of these things after school and things. And for me, I'm like, if I have to do more than my job and get the, which is just part-time and quite a simple job, I can't even do the big full-on types of jobs that I used to do, just to do that and get the kids to school and back and things and to maybe have a couple of activities a week and one thing in the weekend is almost too much as it is. So the idea of trying to keep up with everybody else, I had this weekend, I had two things on a Saturday and friends were like, oh, do you want to do something on Friday?
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got two things to do on the weekend that are different from things that I normally do and I just cannot do anything else.
Yeah.
And that I think that other people sometimes think that I'm a bit ridiculous or a bit pathetic.
Who cares what people think though? This is the thing.
I do care a lot what people think.
I can see that. How did you do that? As a high-flying TV3 exec.
Well, you know what? Is that I'm not good at doing essays and preparing things and organising things.
Mm-hmm.
I can fly by the seat of my pants really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get away. I wouldn't have called myself a high-flying, a medium-flying TV exec.
Oh,
but I write everything
down.
I'm really good at managing. I'm a good manager because I genuinely really care about what everybody else is doing and I get a massive kick out of other people doing things really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm good at management. I'm good at conducting other people doing stuff.
Okay.
And I can retain that kind of information in my head if I'm good at it and I can problem solve and answer questions on the fly really well. So behind the scenes production, it's all immediate people talking in your ear, make this happen, make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
That, if I get into it and I'm there and then you switch me on, I can go la 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 and do it really, really well and answer a million questions and solve all of those problems and I light up and I'm buzzing.
Yep.
And then I'm like, I'm out and then I have to go and be all by myself for a while. But if I had to write a report or make a presentation by next Tuesday, I will just be like, I don't know how to do a presentation. And I will go in my head until Monday evening. And then I'll be like, oh, my God, I've got to do this thing. How do I do it? And somehow I used to be able to pull it out of my ass in general or get somebody else to help me or figure it out.
I love that. It's that last minute procrastination that you just, you freeze. And then you go, oh, done it. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So I can do that. I know I've got it in me, but I'm better... in that way. But with the corporate universe, I found the older I got, and maybe it's also menopause a little bit, maybe it is also that, but I was losing the ability to not say what I thought.
Yes, sir.
In meetings and things. And it started off with my face and my colleagues would be like, Anna, your face is like out of control. You can't, like, when that person said that stupid thing, you went like this. And I was like, did I? And they were like, it wasn't a micro expression. It was a macro expression.
So you just...
So I just lost that. And then it started coming out of my mouth. So I'd just be like, you want us to do what? Instead of like, oh, what a great idea. So I just lost... I lost my kind of diplomatic, natural ability. And it started with my face. And I Botoxed, but it wasn't enough.
You Botoxed? I want to try Botox.
Oh, I love a bit of Botox. I'll tell you what.
Give me the details later.
So that was kind of... So that worked really well in my working life.
Okay.
And that's what I'm good at home is sorting out lots of problems. And I am really good at the emotional stuff.
with the kids. And it works quite well because my husband is really practical and actually will go dunk, 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 make sure the dinner's made, da, 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 and that people can get to places on time and he'll drive and stuff.
Yeah.
But when someone's having an absolute meltdown, he doesn't know what to do with that. Sure. And I can spend an hour talking to somebody and trying to work out what's going on in their mind. Or I sit with Lola and we watch reality TV to figure out what people's intentions are and different... Because you know how with kids who are autistic, sometimes the kind of nuances of social stuff is difficult whether or not someone's being honest or lying. And so I found... And this is my parenting tip for kids, for parents of neurodiverse kids. Yeah. Watch reality TV shows. Find a reality TV show that they like and that's appropriate. And then you can go through going, oh, my goodness, yes, that person is so charming. So with Lola, he's so charming and so lovely, but I wonder if he's really being honest, if that's really how he feels. And then you can watch the story unfold and be like, oh, he was lying to her. Which she wouldn't expect.
Yeah. You know how you talked about anxiety and depression, how you've struggled with that for a long time. Do you think it does tie in quite strongly with ADHD, with the feelings of worthlessness or failing?
Yeah. And I wonder if it had, if things would have been a bit different if I was in this generation. So with my son, who I think probably does have ADHD, and I'm recognize, he reminds me so much of how I was.
Yeah.
Kind of irrational emotions sometimes. Just an inability to be able to sort himself out, and he kind of almost pumps himself up more. It's almost like he keeps going with all the big feelings rather than tries to calm himself down.
Mm-hmm.
And he is also great at stuff that he's really good at.
Yeah.
And doesn't try at things that he can't do. And that I didn't want to fail at anything. So things that I found too hard, I just wouldn't attempt.
You know, hopefully people who are listening to this are resonating with what we're talking about, because it's such a big deal to me.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal to you. It rules 98% of my life.
Yeah, it does. And it really, I think that the big thing was the loser failure thing. And so I think that knowing that there's a reason for why you think the way that you do and the way that your brain works and that it's not just you, that's been the most powerful, useful thing for me, I think, with this diagnosis and the medication for sure.
Yeah.
But to be like, oh, my God, that's not just... I felt very alone in my own head for 50 years. It's quite a long time to feel like nobody quite understands you, and you're having to do a slightly fake personality for each, even though it is you, but an edited personality for each different situation that you're in, and masking all of that. And that's autism and ADHD. Girls get diagnosed later.
And is that why you eventually quit your job? Like, I quit my job last year because it was too hard to mask.
Yeah, so that was kind of where I was at. And the backstabbing, like, corporate media-y, salesy, like that side of things.
Backstabbing. Tell me the stories of the backstabbing.
I can't do that on air.
Can you?
But
you don't work there anymore.
No, but I think just in general, so in your kind of corporate media, big network universe, there can be a lot of climbing and a lot of backstabbing. And there's a lot of, I'm never going to work in the industry.
Who cares?
There's a lot of men in the industry.
Pale, male, stale.
Who have got women on the next level down doing all of the work and clearing up a whole bunch of stuff behind them while they earn significantly more money and kind of schmooze around the place, given it the big I am. And I just can't deal with that anymore. I want to, like, stamp my feet and throw things and go, he didn't even do anything.
Yeah, you should be in his job.
He didn't even do anything.
Well, that's the same.
So-and-so and so-and-so did all of that work.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's the thing. The women should be the CEOs because just better at it.
Men, look at the world at the moment, having been run by men for such a long time.
Yep. It's funny because yesterday my partner was talking to me about Buddhism, Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
And I got that idea in my head and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to become a Zen Buddhist.
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to. And she was like, oh, yeah, you should Google it. And I was like, no.
No,
it's too much work.
No.
Too much work, can't be a Zen Buddhist now.
But can you meditate? I can't. People are like, you should meditate and do mine. And I'm like, I cannot do that.
You can. You know, can I? You can, Anna, because I did it for a whole year. I did 10 to 15 minutes a day. And it was incredibly boring.
I was like,
no, it was great. It was great. It was really amazing. It was really amazing.
But you actually did it. How did you make yourself do it? Because that is like something that I would put off all the time. I'd be like, oh, it's on my to-do list.
But I also
bit of
ran 3 half marathons that year because I became a runner. You know, we
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
We hyper-focus on things,
and you do it for a bit, yep. And then and you're then like
I'm,
that. Yeah,
I'm not a runner anymore. Yeah. I haven't run in months.
Yeah.
So I was a meditator, a runner, but I'd also left a relationship, a marriage as well. So I had lots of time on my hands.
And yeah. you needed to find something to hyper-focus on that wasn't the
I had
deep
to meditate
stuff.
To get through a divorce, and it got me through.
I'm really
try it.
Okay.
Headspace. Get the app.
I have got that app.
Yeah.
Really I've got that app about a year ago.
But you haven't started on your journey.
I had a little phase where I was downloading meditation apps. So I've got that. I've got a few on my phone.
What other things do you start and then not finish?
Everything.
Like
everything.
What at the moment?
Pilates I did for a while and I didn't finish. But then also I get on these ideas of crazy things. So I found this thing and I was telling my friends the other day. I was like, oh my God, I found this thing. You go to a place and they strap you into like an electrical suit and then it pulses or whatever.
Wait, is this an idea or is it a real
thing? No, it's a real thing. It's somewhere in Victoria Street.
And
they put you into some kind of suit and then it contracts your muscles and then you do it for 15 minutes and the lady's like, stand there like this and you stand there like that and it like goes and it somehow is like doing an hour and a half in the gym or something. So
the lazy way of getting fit.
Yeah, apparently. So I was like, well, this could be my thing. This could be the way that I become like, goodness knows what. So I had a bit of a look in that, but then they said, because I've had 2 hip replacements, I'd have to get a doctor's certificate. And so I put that,
I haven't phoned
the doctor,
work.
It's too much hard work. And also, what if they got it wrong and then my hips got magnetically attached to the suit and I had to be, so, I mean, anything could happen. And weird stuff happens to me. Weird, unfortunate things happen to me.
What like?
Like when I just had my hip replacement, I thought I was being attacked by a giant butterfly. So I jumped up out of my seat and face planted on my deck and had to go off in an ambulance to the hospital. And then I didn't even have a dislocated hip. But then they gave me lots of morphine and then I just hit on all the doctors.
Yes.
I was lying there not looking attractive. My friend was like, you were not looking attractive. Oh, well. And every time the doctor came in, I was like,
what?
Doctor babe. You're back.
Do you tell your husband all this? Is he just like, you're mad?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And like, bless him. So we had to take my son to a jaw specialist last week. And the doctor, the jaw surgeon, was the most beautiful man I've ever seen in
And
my
you were
life.
Hitting on him?
No, because I was too old. I might have been a little bit giggly. I may have been a little giddy. I was with all my children and my husband. Yeah. And then we got in the... And this is the blurting as well, the blurty ADHD thing.
I do the same thing.
You're like, don't say it, don't say it. Oh,
then
I
you
said it.
What did you say?
Got in the car and then I was like, I've got no one else to tell. Was that guy not the most ridiculously gorgeous man you've ever seen in your life? And then my sons in the back of the car started chanting, divorce dad, divorce dad.
He would probably be thinking that too, actually.
Yeah. No, he probably was. But he is, he's very tolerant. He's a very tolerant man.
So what advice do you have from your learnings for other people who are listening to this podcast?
To my podcast.
To your podcast,
Nikomoa. I would say, so from 2 perspectives, from my own and from my kind of mum perspective.
Yeah.
So one, I would be... trust your instincts, and if you think that there's something unusual about your child,
or yourself,
go and find the right kind of specialist if you can. It's an absolute not. I think that that's a really hard thing as well, is the resources. And I mean, I had to wait 6 months to see a psychiatrist.
Wow.
And that was private through Southern Cross. Mm-hmm. So And I know that the waiting list for therapy and stuff for children and everything is really long as well. Yeah. But I think you want to know what you're dealing with. Don't be scared of feeling like there's going to be a label or you're going to have a label, because I think it's more important to know who you are. It was really valuable. I spent a lot of time thinking about whether or not I should tell my children that they were autistic or that they had anything different. I was like, I don't know whether or not that's a good idea or whether what that will be. And in the end, I did. And it's been really good for them because Charlie, I think, who is my son, who had real difficulties at school last year, he's been doing better this year, but he would have just thought, why am I this angry kid who finds it really hard to make friends compared to the other kids? And then once he knew that there was a reason why he would be having those difficulties and why things would be different, that really helped him. And the same for Lola.
Okay.
And that's been the same for me. So I would say go and find somebody.
Yep.
See if you can get
some help. As hard as it is getting on the wait list.
Yeah. Read stuff about it, because even if you find stuff online and you read stuff that other people with ADHD have written and you find those things familiar, that's really nice. It's really nice reading something from somebody completely different that is like, and you go, oh my God, I thought that was just me. That is a really weird random thing to do. And actually it's a thing. And there's all these other people who are in bed in the morning
on their phones
wondering about how they're possibly going to do three things.
Oh,
you know,
the milk.
That was really calming and made me feel so much better in general.
And what's the second thing? Was there a second thing?
Oh.
Thanks so much for listening to It's Personal with me, Anika Moa. Ngā mihi to our guest Anna Pillay. I feel seen, and I'm sure many others will after hearing your kōrero today, so kia ora. Also to the team that helps make this happen, Charlotte Purdy and Vanessa Hawken from Rogue Productions, Tim Watkin and Liz Garten from RNZ, and our audio engineers Blair Stagpole and Adrian Holley. Cole Easton-Farrelly is a video editor, and thanks to Jane Joyce for graphics and Brianna Juricic for production support. It's Personal with Anika Moa is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to follow so you don't miss an episode.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.